Good evening and welcome to DFD. We are slightly depleted today. The quartet has become the duet, and I am joined by Norfolk's own answer to Timo Pukki. Posse, how you doing?
Thank you for the introduction. But I think, you know, my mum is one of the people that gets confused about me and Timo Pukki. Not all bald men with a beard look the same. However, it's nice to be joined by you, mate.
Good. So, we haven't got any games to talk about this week. Obviously, the main talk of the week has been transfers and transfer deadline day. Some have done better than others. And then, of course, we'll go through each of the teams, discuss what they've done, have they done enough. Obviously, as we speak, we are now, I think the deadline is 11 p.m. this evening, so
12 o'clock in Scotland if Aaron Ramsey joins Rangers in time. Which is a strange one.
So we will try and keep up to date, although I don't think there will be much to add based on what we cover, but you never know. Could be a Peter Udelmany moment. We'll see. I guess I'm going to start with Newcastle, actually, because there's a lot of talk going into the window about Newcastle, rightfully so. New owners, wealth. Were they going to navigate the January market? Were they not? Just touched on them there. Obviously, in a relegation battle, Eddie Howe has come in. So, obviously, their main headline record signing, Bruno Guimarães, came in from Lyon for a club record deal, I believe.
40-odd million?
Yeah, I think so, I believe. So it was about 30 million up front, and then 40 million or 50 million with add-ons.
Basically, loose change for the owners.
Yeah. So he came in, record signing, great signing, in my opinion, for him, given the level of club that was speculated against him. Kieran Trippier was obviously the first one through the door, Chris Wood, Bruno Guimarães, and also one that went under the radar, but I think probably a good deal given that Luka Dinia came in for Villa, so it was a good one for Target. Always struck me as a player that works hard. So on paper there, they've got, you know, four good players that should be able to kind of slot straight in. I don't think there'll be any judgment on Bruno having problems settling in there. He should be able to do a job.
The only thing I would say about that is you don't usually have a relegation scrap with an expensive Brazilian player that's sort of like an untested Premier League signing. Don't get me wrong, clear talent. However, it doesn't strike relegation scrap savers because they're usually ones that get their own way, like a bit of flair, etc. Not necessarily the Premier League of all leagues scrap to fight. However, no, it's one of those things on paper, great signing. Yeah. However, for an outsider looking in, yeah, it's a bit of jealousy being a Norwich fan, but it doesn't really sing relegation scrap material. However, undoubtedly talented.
Yeah, and my next point to that was obviously there's the settling in period potentially. And the other thing, of course, now to me on paper, to be fair, we spoke about before the window opened and then getting players in that could potentially hit the ground running and not kind of square pegs and in round holes. I think to be fair to them, on the most part, they've probably done that. I think they'll be a little bit disappointed. I mean, we're waiting on Dan Byrne also, I think, to come in this evening. Another one that they've tied up.
Well, I read earlier that Dele Alli, they could hijack the Dele Alli to Everton move, but I think that's pretty much set in stone now to go to Everton. However, you never know with the riches they've got.
Yeah, I think that might be a little bit too late. But for me, again, and I've said it mentioned a couple of times, I think Newcastle fans, from what I can see on Twitter today, they're disappointed they haven't got that marquee centre-back signing that they expected. And also, up top, still a little bit light. Obviously, they've brought in Chris Wood, who is a grafter, but I think he's yet to score. I don't think he's off the mark yet. I could be wrong, but I don't think he's off the mark yet after three or four league games. Obviously, I've just mentioned Zapata there. They were linked with a striker from the French league this morning, but I think they put pay to that because there was too long a turnaround. So remains to be seen to me of if they've done enough.
Well, they've done more than the teams around them, haven't they?
Yeah, and I think teams around them will probably look at that and think, should we have done more? I think Burnley, that Waghorn signing was crucial for them. I think that's quite a clever signing for them. But it is their only signing that they've brought in. So Chris Wood goes out and that's who they brought in. I mean, it'll be interesting with Newcastle. I think on paper, those three or four signings could potentially do well. Question marks over how quickly Bruno will settle into that team. And of course, if he can gel with the rest of the players around him. On paper, the rest of them, Trippier, Target, good players, should do a job. They shouldn't require much. And as I say, Chris Wood, that underwhelmed me, to be honest. I think they needed a little bit more firepower there. I don't think he was necessarily the answer. That could have been more of a political signing in weakening a relegation rival as opposed to anything else, I think. But we'll see. And of course, there could be some late drama a little bit later on. So on that basis, Cossie, are we saying they've done enough to stay up? Or are they still in the mire after the window tonight?
Well, just because they've done more than the rest of the teams around them, there's no reason why they shouldn't stay up now, really. I think they've done everything they can. And any Newcastle fans are saying, if they're saying that they're disappointed with what they've done, come on, look at the teams around you. What have Norwich done? What have Watford done? What can we do? There's no excuses now, really. They've got the money, they've got the infrastructure, they've got the fans. There's no reason why they shouldn't get behind Eddie Howe now and go on to stay up, really. However, that's easier said than done. So good luck to them with whatever they've done. I'd love to be in a position at Norwich to be able to have the money that they've spent. However, I don't think I'd be crying if my team had just spent 80 to 100 million pounds on players and still think, oh, no, we haven't done enough. So, yeah, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see. Part of me still hopes that they get relegated, but
I think everyone wants it.
that would be amazing, but we shall see. Now, moving on from Newcastle, they were probably the biggest talking point coming into the January window. They're expected to be the biggest spenders, and they haven't let us down on that sense. Purely just now going through the teams, we won't cover every single one in as much detail, but I want to. Again, this will is close to Cookie's heart, who's a quarter of this podcast. So, you know, there's been comparative fortunes, shall we say, across North London, Arsenal, Tottenham. I'm going to come to Arsenal first because they're the first on the list. And there was much speculation going into this window about who they were going to bring in, striker, potentially another midfielder. And as we sit here today, their ins stand at Lino Sousa from West Brom. I couldn't tell you, I've never heard of him. Austin Trusty, the American keeper from Colorado Rapids.
Pretty pointless.
Well, yeah. And again, the big talking points here is just the sheer amount of outgoing. So again, they're not all relevant to the first team, but Callum Chambers is one that very much caught everyone off guard.
Where the hell did that come from?
You know, Pablo Mare, Udinese, Kolasinac, Balogun, and Maitland-Niles. So, and of course, there's talk tonight that Aubameyang, I'm not too sure, but I'm pretty certain I had seen something that the deal to Barca is back on or is done. So an hour ago, it was announced that Aubameyang is set to join Barcelona on a permanent deal, taking a pay cut to join. Arsenal make a 25 million saving on his wages. But again, it's another striker gone, less firepower. They're left now with Lacazette and Nketiah.
At least with Aubameyang going, a distraction has left the club.
Yeah,
he was a bit of a poison in that squad, to be honest. He was on ridiculous wages, distraction to any potential signings as well, thinking, well, if I'm going to be signing as a striker and this player is on 350 grand a week, it's a similar situation to Ozil and when Ramsey left. So, like, well, Ramsey was performing a lot better than Ozil. And it's just like, well, he wasn't being offered the wages of what, supposedly a top team pays now, because Arsenal have sort of fallen into the trap of the other teams to try and keep their star men. But however, if you believe the money that Traore went to Barcelona, they've still got a pull. And if they're saving £25 million in wages and Aubameyang's happy to take a pay cut, then all the best to him, really.
And I think ironically, I think the last team he scored against, I could be wrong, and I don't mean to, I'm always a Palace fan to say this, but if I'm not mistaken, I think his last league goal could well have been, or one of them certainly, was against Crystal Palace back when we played them in September. It's an interesting one. Obviously, they've still got top four aspirations, currently sitting in sixth, 2 points behind United. They've got a game in hand on United as well, and a couple of games in hand on West Ham, who are sitting in fifth. So, well, I guess for Arteta and Arsenal's perspective, it's more about now how strongly they can finish the season and, you know, try and secure that top four spot. That'll be the big thing for them. I think Arteta's got to try his level best to keep them in it. It's going to be tough because of the lack of firepower. I think a lot of people were expecting big signings, or at least a number of signings to come in, and it simply hasn't happened. And I think that, you know, there has been a bit of discontent. Doesn't look like they're going to do any business today at all. An odd situation nonetheless, because given that they're only a couple of points off top four, still got a game in hand and a couple of games in hand on West Ham, it baffles me really that they've come into a situation where they've got rid of Aubameyang. Yes, they're saving on the wages, but Lacazette and Nketiah are out of contract in the summer. Or Nketiah is, and Lacazette is maybe out of contract next year, I'm not sure. But point being, that's how many players are they going to let go on these? I mean, Callum Chambers was a free transfer. You know, they've got players that are just sitting there and they're happy to get rid of on a free transfer, but they've not replaced any. So
I think the board might be thinking that, like, Arteta's spent a lot of money already on paper, and you think, well, why is their squad so bare? And especially as at the minute, they seem to have injuries, suspensions, disciplinary problems on the pitch. You think, well, you can't always be the victims of your own downfall, really. It's like, no. Well, it's your fault that you get sent off. It's your fault that the players haven't performed. Is Aubameyang has been a big distraction as well? Is there man management problems there? Mm-hmm. Or was he just a part of the old regime that he was stuck on a big contract? Mm-hmm. And they're going to just try and throw money at the problem. But that's not the Arsenal way.
No. And it's interesting because, I mean, you know, Balogun and Maitland-Niles, I know Balogun was still a youngster, but there was a lot of talk about him wanting a new big contract and wanting to play. And, you know, Maitland-Niles actually thinks a really good player, but there was murmurs of discontent in the summer window from a bit of a scene that him and Arteta had. So they really are down to bare bones. So it'll be interesting to see now how they end the season. Their big challenge will be getting into Europe, I think.
The thing is, with the call-offs that's happening with the Premier League, Arsenal cannot be one of those teams that has any more call-offs.
No. They can't. And they're going to have to, you know, as I say, they're down to bare bones. It could go brilliantly. I mean, we'll see how much of a problem Aubameyang is, because I guess now in the next few games, we'll see what they're made of. But, you know, an injury to Lacazette, then you're left with Nketiah. I mean, it's risky, but I can only imagine if Cookie was here, what his opinion would be. And based on what...
Well, he's been very, very active on Twitter criticising it, hasn't he?
Yes. Well, here's the thing. I mean, there's plenty of deals. It's easy for us to say in perspective, but the Bruno deal, who actually, I don't know if you noticed in his announcement video, seemed to have a dig at Arsenal. I don't know if you've seen the video on the player's Twitter page, but the video is all like cartoony and it's got all the newspaper reports of his transfer speculation. Read of that what you will.
But it's crazy that a team bottom of the league, or like in the bottom three of the league, are taking players off top
four
Champions League
candidates. Let's face it, in the midst of like for like, it's not a lot of money for Arsenal. But again,
especially with the wages that they're going to be saving with the Aubameyangs. If you look that...
Precisely.
Especially when they're in dire needs for that.
And of course, the other thing is as well, I'm not just talking about Bruno. I mean, you look at Tottenham signings with this Bentenga coming in and the other Swedish player from Juventus, and then you see Dennis Zakaria, who highly rated in Europe for a number of seasons, playing for Mönchengladbach, going to Juventus for £5 million. Aaron Ramsey going to Rangers and Juventus happily subsidising the bulk of his wages. Baffles me that maybe that wasn't an option in midfield for them, maybe till the end of the season. I don't know. I mean, as I say, it could be genius that they're just getting wages off ready for the summer, maybe clean bill of health in the summer. We'll see. I don't see them now. I don't see them getting top four. And I think they may even struggle to get top six, if I'm honest. I think this window could bite them in the arse for that, to be
He's
honest.
got a big mountain to climb.
And I think the only way he could ever put pay for that is if they were still in the FA Cup, which they're not. So it's going to be a tough old climb. You've got Nketiah, who can now sign a pre-contract with the European club, which I think he fully intends to do because he's rejected, Arsenal and him have rejected opportunities in England. So he's bound to go to Germany. How good that is for his mindset going into the rest of the season, because of course he's not going to want to get injured for his big contract offer. Playing with fire there, I think, Arsenal. But as I say, for me, nowhere near good enough.
They could get burnt, or they could get into the top four, and we just made to make ourselves look silly and think, well, Arteta knows what he's doing. However, he hasn't exactly got the experience to 100% know what he's doing.
No.
However, Arsenal fans have been toxic enough with him in and out at the start of the season. He has turned it around, and full respect to him. However, now it's time to pick up your bollocks and see what you're made of, because you have been sort of screwed yourself, or he's either screwed himself over or the board has screwed him over, left him with the bare bones, really.
No, absolutely. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see what Cookie's viewpoint is when he's next on the show. And that'll be after their next set of well, I would say their FA Cup result, but they're not actually in their FA Cup. So sorry, Cookie, but there we go. Moving on. We will go directly to the team below them in alphabetical order, as per the Premier League site. Worth a brief mention, Aston Villa. Gerrard's done a good job since he's been at the club. Coutinho in on loan from Barcelona, obviously the massive headline grabber. As much, if that couldn't be big enough, Lucadinho then followed from Everton. Rob Olsen, goalkeeper from Roma, and then caught everyone blindsided again, a la Danny Ings from the summer. Callum Chambers from Arsenal as well. No real, but as I say, target went to Newcastle, but that was obviously because of Digne coming in and blocking his time for playing time there. El Ghazi obviously went out on loan to Everton, which didn't surprise me too much given the amount of depth they have in that attacking area now. Solid window for Villa.
Yeah, to be honest, they're not going to get relegated very much, very unlikely to finish in the top six. However, it's a bit of a statement when they're being linked with players like Luis Suarez in the summer, and next season they could be a top six team. And again, the Gerrard audition for the Liverpool job could be well on its way for the future. But good luck to them. I've got nothing bad to say about Villa. Enjoy watching them play, and obviously with Buendia and Coutinho in the attack of the two of the three, that could be really exciting to watch.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, as I say, they're not going to do anything this year by way of breaking into Europe or anything. Obviously, I think they're out of the FA Cup now, aren't they? They lost to Man United in the previous round. So, trophy wise, it'll be pretty bare. But I think they set themselves up for well for next
Future.
season.
Exactly.
And obviously, we'll see how consistent Coutinho is as well between now and the end of the season as well. Brentford. Not much to say on them. One main headline that got confirmed today. So they've brought in Jonas Lossell from Midtjylland. But the big one for them and for the football world, I guess, and they're probably everyone's relieved to see him back in the game and see how he gets on in the
100%.
Premier League. Christian Eriksen comes in, short-term contract with an option, I think, to sign for another year at the end of this season. I mean, look. The way they play football, I think that could be fairly effective for them. And I think Thomas Frank could probably get, again, depends where he's at. Obviously, he's been training, he's happy, he's had his medical. But look, if they can get half the player that he was at Spurs, as we remember him in the Premier League, then it's, you know, as I say, I think, much to your dismay, I don't think they're going to get relegated. I think they'll just have enough to come out of it. And on that,
I think the whole footballing world wants Eriksen to succeed, including myself, regardless of the bitterness towards Brentford this season. However, wish him all the best. I really hope he's back to the player that he was. When it happened, obviously, the whole footballing world just stood still and just thought, prayed, thinking, God, I want him to, you know, pull through this. And 7 months later, he's signing for a Premier League side. I know he's not played, but he'll have doctors working with him 24/7. He'll have all the assessments from top to bottom. I think he's just had his COVID jab as well. So,
yeah, no, everyone's relieved to see him back. And as I say, we hope he has a happy and healthy return to the Premier League. Not transfer related on Brentford, but a little slight headline over the weekend. Ivan Toney out on holiday, social media.
Come on, like, what can you possibly turn around and say other than what the fuck are you doing?
I mean,
like, you cannot say, if anyone in any walk of life said that about their employer, come on, you're getting an absolute bollocking. He came out and apologised, said, I explained it to the manager. Is he just trying to be the big bollocks in front of a girl to do whatever he wants to do? Then, okay, that's something that you have to have an awkward conversation with your manager. But considering he's not exactly set the world alight this season, you cannot turn around and say that. That's such a stupid thing. And that's why some people, like people who don't like football, turn around and see that and just think, do you know what? That's the reason why we don't like football. But, you know, it could spur him on to be Brentford's best player for the next 6 months until the end of the season. But come on, mate, grow up. Grow yeah, up, I mean, seriously.
It was slightly embarrassing, wasn't it? As I say, I'm not going to say too
so
much.
Cringe.
But when it's
so
your,
cringe.
When it's your main, you know, your main striker, it's a bit...
Especially when football fans pay, like, you know, we're working class people, the majority, and you just think they pay good, hard working money to come and see their team every other week. And it's just like, you see your top striker doing that. If that was me and any Norwich player, obviously I speak about Todd Cantwell in a bit, but even he's not been that much of a bell end on camera. Come on.
I mean, yeah, no, there was no need. Not what you need either, especially when you're not out of the woods just yet, to be fair.
Yeah, and he wasn't provoked. He wasn't. It's not like he's had a falling out with the fans or the manager or the players. He's not been provoked to say that. He's just been an idiot after a few drinks. And that's exactly why you think, oh, why have the players had a winter break when they've had COVID breaks? And why do they need it? What, to go to Dubai or whatever and get pissed up and start slating your employees? Grow up, seriously.
Yeah, nah, it's... not the model professional, not the model professional. Anyway, who am I to judge? who am I to judge? Right, Brighton, I mean, they've brought in a couple of players, relatively unknown. I'm not just going to gloss over them, but, you know, there's no kind of headline grabbers there. Main ones.
They've signed a striker. Which is what they needed to do. £6 million. I don't know anything about him. I'm not going to pretend I do. However, they kept Lamptey and they kept Bissouma, so...
Yeah,
that's a positive for them.
That was the big thing for them. And of course, Aaron Connolly, interesting one, went out on loan to Borough. And Dan Byrne, not been confirmed just yet, but he's obviously Newcastle bound as well. But as I say, I think for them and where they are this season, doesn't make any
sense. They're not going down.
No.
Honestly, they've just got a bit of a mini battle between you and, like, you know, Crystal Palace and Brighton, who's going to finish the highest in the league. And that's going to be exciting for those two clubs, especially Brighton fans.
Very true. That's all they look forward to every year. Burnley, again, not much business, but probably the most single piece of important business for them after the nightmare scenario of Newcastle coming in. Who would have thought someone would have came in and triggered a £25 million release clause for Chris Wood? They must have thought they hit the jackpot when that came in.
Well, they did.
They did. And I mean, to be honest, I don't think Burnley fans will be too disappointed. He comes with a decent pedigree, but Wout Weghorst comes in from Wolfsburg. I'd say for them, that is a pretty crucial signing, and it will be intriguing to see how Sean Dyche does with him. But
he's a unit.
Clever signing on their part. And yeah, it gives them a fighting chance, but, you know, it's already a big job for them anyway.
Huge.
Chelsea. not much to be said, nothing.
Apparently they've inquired about Dembélé at Barcelona. That was reported earlier.
I saw that, but I don't think not much is happening with that, is it, right now?
Don't think that's really materialised. But that would be interesting because he's had a torrid time at Barcelona. Mm-hmm. He's got a lot to prove. I think they spent 110 million quid on him. They're bringing in Aubameyang, so they potentially could let him go. But it seems like just a bit of a last minute. Like, let's see who's about for Chelsea, maybe.
Yeah.
To go along with their other hundreds of millions of pounds worth of strikers they've got. And then their fans cry about them being short, apparently.
And their bloated youth academy as well. So not enough and more to say there. Palace, no. Nothing. I mean, obviously it was documented. I mean, it would have been a nice luxury for Palace had we got Van de Beek, I think. I don't think, despite Cookie's revel and delight that we missed out, I don't think it would have made or break our season. We weren't going to break into Europe and we weren't going to get relegated. So, you know, for the money involved in the loan and everything, as I say, it would have been a nice to have, but if it didn't happen.
No, it's not a necessity. It's not essential. Whereas where he's gone, obviously, Everton, that we'll talk about in a minute, they would have probably pushed as hard as they could to get him, to be honest.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think the only thing, there is one piece of news from Palace tonight, which quite exciting one for the future. I don't know too much about him, but Derby fans hold him in high regard. But we have had a bid accepted, £1 million for Luke Plang, who £1 million could be completed tonight. And the EFL apparently have agreed, in the complicated situation that is Derby County, for us to loan him back. So they get the money, but also it allows them to loan them back as well. So I don't think they'll be too disappointed about it. It's £1 million in the bank and they get a good player, you know, back into their books to try and see them through to the championship season. As I say, other than that, nothing too much to report. Quite quiet.
And to talk about Derby very briefly, I did watch their game on Sunday and the ending of the game, absolutely superb. An overhead kick, 95th minute equaliser after going 2-0 down at home. And Rooney obviously turning down Everton in that same weekend as well. That was huge.
I must say, we'll come on to that when we get to... we are on to Everton next, actually, funnily enough. Obviously, they waved goodbye to Luka Dinia. Headline signing for them, so they brought El Ghazi in on loan and Van der Beek got confirmed this morning from under the stifles of Palace. And also, they brought in, not a transfer, but Frank Lampard as manager. And as Kossi had just alluded to there, the big news over the weekend, which I thought might happen, to be fair. I think it was last week and I mentioned I didn't think he'd jump ship. But fair play to him, true to his word, Rooney did not jump ship. And one, I think that has to be applauded. And I think two, that probably shows that he appreciates where he is in his managerial journey to not jump too quickly. But it was good to see from a footballing perspective.
He's hungry to succeed and he doesn't want to let the fans down. I think he feels like he's got a job to finish. And if he manages to keep Derby up after, was it 21 points? That is pretty insane. There's so much going on behind the scenes with the owners, the money problems, etc., etc. It's very easy to say that they shouldn't be in that situation full stop. However, it's not the fans' fault. It's not Wayne Rooney's fault. However, good luck to him. Families are Forest fans, good luck to him.
No, he's doing a good job. He's doing a very good job. And if he does keep them up, then given the circumstances, unbelievable. Unbelievable. And fair play to him as well. Obviously, they brought in Lampard. Remains to be seen. I think, unfortunately, they're another club I'd love to see sucked into a relegation fight, but I think, annoyingly, he will probably do enough and get them to win a couple of games on the bounce to see them over the line. But I will maintain, I don't think he's the long-term option for them at all. I really don't.
He's definitely not. Yeah, I think he's a sort of a pipe dream, really. He's not really been that good everywhere he's been, and especially at Derby, he did exactly the same as what the previous manager did the year before. Got a lucky move to Chelsea, brought in good youth, don't get me wrong. However, ultimately, did nothing with a team that won the Champions League, as we've alluded to before. I think Everton fans just wanted a big name at their club who's English, who they respect as a former superb player, don't get me wrong. But yeah, it's not really what they need, really. However, they've tried the Ancelotti's, they've tried the Benitez, so I can see why they've done it. But we'll see what happens. I'd love them to get sucked into the relegation, because obviously they've spent so much money, and their fans do get quite agitated on Twitter, as we've had recently. You've only spent 230 million net spend rather than the 500 million that I quoted, but still, only the 230 million pounds and you lost to Norwich. Sorry, no sympathy. But yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens.
And one last headline for them. Not officially confirmed just yet, I don't think. Dele Alli becoming an option. So 10 million up front after 20 appearances. And then I think there's a bunch of massive add-ons that will take it up to 30 or 40 million after. But
are we all just like, well, not necessarily hoping, but Everton fans especially, and if he'd have joined the club that I support, I'd be thinking, oh, this is Dele Alli. But we're all sort of thinking, yeah, 5 years ago Dele Alli, 4 years ago Dele Alli, that goal against Palace, just thinking, well, that was what, 2016 now, 2017? I remember what boots he was wearing for that, and I think they were released in about 2016. So you're talking about a player that potentially could have been incredible, doing well at England, doing well at Spurs, but for the last 3 years, he's just been a complete shadow. I'd love him to succeed, just for an English fan perspective. And he was so exciting to watch. Some of the things that he used to do on that football pitch was incredible. However, you watch the Mourinho bashing and, you know, just completely put him down. That should have been the moment to spur him on. But you know what happens behind closed doors with Mourinho? He tends to suck the life out of players. And he seems to fall victim for that.
And got to say, in terms of the deal, 10 million that's due after 20 appearances is basically a free transfer for half the season. I mean, and if that works out, I mean, he's still relatively young. And if they get the player that we're used to 5 years ago, then, but as you say, remains to be seen. But a gamble, that could be worth. And could pay itself off in the long term. Have they done enough for you to stay out of trouble?
They might have done enough already to stay out of trouble because of the teams below them. However, with obviously Norwich winning the last couple of games, one of them being against them, they've still got two games in hand. However, it could get a little bit squeaky bum time if obviously Norwich beat Palace in a couple of weeks and Frank Lampard's first game might not go as planned.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with that. It will be interesting. I think, unfortunately for me, again, being cynical, I'd love for Everton to get sucked into it properly. But I think, unfortunately, they've probably just about done enough, and maybe they get a new manager bounce out of Lampard as well. Right, moving on then. So Leeds and Leicester. Leeds brought in one player, Mateo Joseph Fernandez from Espanyol. Not going to pretend that I know anything about him. And there's a few fringe players that went off the books. Leicester, again, a handful of players, fringe players off the books as well. Interesting with Leicester. Did you expect them to be more active given the kind of up and down and form? I know January is always a window where it's kind of only if you're desperate, but could they have done with dipping in the market and just boosting their options in particular areas, or...?
Maybe in the striking area. Obviously, Vardy's getting older and he's been injured recently, and I think he might still be injured. Don't quote me on that. However, I think it's more about Rodgers needing to prove himself, because he's getting a very quick reputation of bottling it, getting to a certain point in the season and then just completely going off the boil. However, they've completely gone off the boil early this season rather than the last few games to miss out on the top four. But they're barely being mentioned in the top four at the minute. And yeah, they could have done, but it would have potentially have been desperate signings. But they should have the squad to be able to do it. They've done it before. I know last season they sort of bottled it, but they still won a trophy. But yeah, they should be okay. It's difficult to say about Leicester, to be honest. Really difficult.
Yeah, they're very up and down this season. I think it's one of those seasons where they just have to almost write off kind of the European aspirations and just focus on finishing as strongly as they can. I glossed over Leeds because obviously not a lot has gone on there, but a couple of interesting things that happened over the last couple of days. One, the supposed rumours of West Ham preparing £50 million bid for Calvin Phillips. And also the speculation again with West Ham linking them with Rafinha. So two things for me on that. One, obviously neither happened in the end, and I doubt they would have done anyway, but
not in January especially. And I can't, it's sort of like a sideward move in my opinion.
Interesting though, for what it means for Leeds in the summer, because if West Ham are courting them already for £50 million bids, big job ahead maybe for Leeds coming up in the summer, given that I still think they need strengthening in other areas as well. But again, I just thought that was an interesting one to mention. One club that was linked with Rafinha, obviously never ended up going for him, but they did sign an attacking player. Your second team, third team, fifth team, wherever they fit in your hierarchy there. Stole, much to Scott's delight, although he'll argue he's not bothered because it wasn't a priority signing for them, but Luis Diaz from Porto. Brilliant signing.
Looks a very, very, very good player. It sort of came out of nowhere as well, but that could be the kick up the arse that Mane potentially needs. I don't necessarily think it's Luis Diaz as a replacement for Salah, given the contract talks. I think they'll both be there, to be honest, and I think that's something that's going to eventually get sorted. However, if it doesn't get sorted, looking at how good he looks, that could be a replacement. But again, will he come into the team? When Jota signed, you'd have thought, oh, he's not going to disrupt the front three at Liverpool. They're too good. And now Jota's the second name on that team sheet, especially in the front three. So that's a great addition, in my opinion. I think that's a huge, huge steal from Spurs.
I think that's a massive sign. And I think maybe not for Salah, but if he's a replacement for Mane, I mean, I think he's only 23. I think he's very young.
Yeah, so, he's not old.
You know, you've got the next kind of five or six signing seasons worth of output. And as you say, you've got Diego Jota there as well. And that goes without saying, if Salah stays, then
they accommodate each other so well, because no one saw Jota to be the player that he is. Like, seriously, he just looks untouchable.
I honestly thought I was one of them. When you signed him, I was like, that's a random signing.
Good, even Wolves fans are saying that.
Good Wolves Premier League player. But I thought, yeah, I didn't seem, I mean, fair play to him. He's really stuck himself in. So,
watch this space with Liverpool. That could, in my opinion, I think the title race is over. However, with Diaz coming in, that could be a couple of slips from Man City. You never know. It could be exciting.
Couple more draws from City side. You never know. You never know.
The Premier League wants it really a little bit more of competition of who's gonna win the Premier League, because at the minute I think everyone's saying, oh, Man City have got this. But then the draw against, obviously, Southampton, you think, well, you never know, but I can't see it. But it's either way, it's going to be exciting to see him, regardless of who you support. It's fun watching Liverpool.
100%. Right. So Man City didn't do a lot, but the main talking point there, I guess, is obviously Ferran Torres, which again was one that took us by surprise. But he went to Barcelona, because I actually thought he was doing okay for City, but Barca came calling and off he went. And obviously the hotly anticipated pursuit of Julian Alvarez from River Plate. So there's quite a few clubs linked with him across Europe. Highly, highly rated. They've brought him in, I think it was for £24 million. He's gone back on loan to River Plate. But to me, if he's...
It was around about that.
If he's the future of Argentinian football, and they're as good as he says he is, to me, in this market, that's an absolute snip.
Yeah, it's something to talk about in the next, after the next transfer window, really, when we start up next season. Because yeah, it's a good sign. It's a bit of a statement one again for City. They can obviously do whatever they want. They can buy whoever they want. Surprised that Newcastle didn't try and hijack it with the £100 million and try and get him for the rest of the season as well. But yeah, not really much to say about them. City look like they're going to win the league, as we say. Would love it to open up a little bit, but yeah, they haven't really got a main striker. But they bought one and just sent him back out on loan. So, yeah, whatever, really. They don't need a striker.
comparatively, it has to be said, And it's been a tough week as well for them by all accounts, but a lot of speculation with all their players. But so Man United over in the red half of Manchester. So Van der Beek this morning obviously confirmed at Everton. Ahmad went to Rangers, the young winger, and he actually scored for them on his debut as well. So he's had an impact there already. Martial obviously went to Sevilla on loan. That was hotly anticipated. Tuanzebe went to Napoli. And then a couple of youngsters went to Birmingham and Bournemouth, respectively. So all outs at United, obviously trimming what is a bloated squad. Jesse Lingard, now on off, will he, won't he? Newcastle, West Ham, dead in the water, back to Newcastle, West Ham. Obviously, it all came to light today. Tricky predicament for him and the club. We all know over the last couple of days, and you know, the reports that came out on Sunday morning, they've been greatly impacted, I should imagine, on Lingard's decision with a certain squad player that they have had to suspend, which probably in the wider context of Lingard and his future, I don't think it's a decision they anticipated having to make. I think
they probably wanted to cash in a little bit on Jesse Lingard on the last day of transfer deadline day, to be honest. However, with everything that's come out, they probably just had to say to Jesse Lingard, you need to stay full stop when you're contracted with us, and then you'll just go for free in the summer. Yeah. Obviously, we're not going to say much about what's happened. However, what will be, and we can't comment.
No. Big blow for United, that. Big blow, obvious for obvious reasons. But again, as for Lingard, he's just had to, well, I guess like you say, they've had to do what they have to do for the sake of the wider squad. And as I say, we aren't going to comment on such events. It is in the hands of the right people, and this is not the forum to discuss it. Of course, though, given the subject and the theme that came out of that, if anyone has been through that or any of those accused accusations, and again, I'm being coy on what I say here because we can't say too much, but if anyone has been impacted by similar reported events, then do make use of the national helplines, websites, support networks, all of which are available. Moving on, out of Manchester. Manchester's too dramatic. There we go. I would say we go to Norwich, but nothing really to say there, really.
Well, I tweeted a tumbleweed, didn't I? However, the only thing that sort of happened with Norwich, a player that we did have out on loan, went to a different team out on loan in the Championship. Cantwell has been heavily linked with Bournemouth. It could be quite a good move.
This is a bit of
a strange one, isn't it? If you'd have said that 2 years ago, that would have been, oh, come on, like, he's not going to go down to a division. But what the hell is going on? Twitter's been full of Norwich fans that have seen that, saying, what the hell is going on? We don't necessarily care about Cantwell, because he's obviously made his feelings known. However, whatever's gone on behind closed doors with Farker, the same sort of thing has happened with Dean Smith, who was meant to be a fresh face for him, really. If it's anything to do with mental health, then fair enough. If he needs to get out of the area, then fair enough. However, as a Norwich fan, you think, well, with a new manager coming in, who's talking very highly of him, and then obviously Cantwell very active on social media, you'd have thought, well, a new manager coming in who likes me, you'd have thought it'd be completely different. But in a way, Bournemouth might actually fit in quite well, because they're both deluded, and yeah, it could be a perfect fit for them. But I don't know, I used to really, really back the player up wholeheartedly, to be honest, and I loved what he brought to us, the local lad, etc. But the PR team of him, like, recently he came out and said that he'd be in support of a drum at Carrow Road to spur the players on. You think, well, hang on a minute, you've actually literally got more involved with a talk about a potential drum at Carrow Road than actually playing.
No, what was he? Was it Diss's answer to Jack Grealish, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. He used to be called there, was it the Dirham Deco?
That was it,
the Dirham Deco. But yeah, like, he can do one, really.
No, well, look, Dean Smith's done a good job, and I don't think the January window particularly lends itself to Norwich's model of doing transfer business anyway. So,
No, it's all about players returning for us, and hopefully they show a bit of fight. And yeah, like I said, the last two games has been absolutely superb. Players that did join us for big money for our budget have started to perform, and yeah, fingers crossed. I'm a lot more optimistic than I was. However, I'm also realistic and know what we're up against.
Before we move on, I mean, Southampton, I was just going to say they brought in Willy Caballero on a free, but they probably pulled together enough results, to be honest, to ensure they're not in the relegation battle. So, no real surprise. Bit of breaking news, not Premier League related, but and much speculated since this morning. But excuse me, Aaron Ramsey has now been confirmed in the last 15 minutes officially as a Rangers player, which quite simply, I'm astounded at that there's no Premier League team took a punt on him. Presumably, his wages have been heavily subsidised because he's on about £400,000 a week at Juventus. So I can't imagine Rangers are picking up more than 10% of that, at most, if that. So great deal
And
for them.
Rangers aren't a threat to them in Europe.
No, so in that respect, a great deal for them and Rangers as well. I digress. As we said, Southampton fairly low key, but given their form and league position going into January, probably didn't feel the need to do anything. Moving on to Tottenham. Now, well, we said about Arsenal being dramatic, and over the other side of North London, it's been equally as dramatic. There's been tension about Conte walking out. And Paratici not doing his job, and the promise, and Levy not changing his ways, and all the frustration that comes with that. It's been a story of Lo Celso this morning joining a Villarreal. Brian Gill, who came with much promise, has gone back out on loan to Valencia, and Ndombele out on loan to Lyon. No obligation, I believe, to buy there. So we'll see what happens with him between now and the end of the season. Jack Clark,
Considering that he cost £54 million, yeah, because it was
Precisely.
fifth. Yeah, sorry to, yeah, £54 million. You think, Christ, there, yeah, no wonder there's not a permanent deal in place, because he's just so bloody expensive. 54 million quid,
No,
Jesus
ridiculous.
Christ.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous. And then I'm going to mention this one because a lot of people are like, who's he? But Jack Clark went out to loan on Sunderland. Now, you'll appreciate this because you're a Championship fan. And I remember when Tottenham signed Jack Clark for £10 million 3 years ago, Palace and quite a few, as well as Tottenham, and there was a couple of other Premier League ready teams that were after him. And I think also, I can't remember off the top of my head, but anyway, very highly courted. And I remember naturally being quite gutted that we didn't get him, but I was really intrigued with how he'd get on at Tottenham because I thought he'd actually play under Poch. He obviously went out on loan, I think the first season he got there. First full season, and I don't remember him ever getting a break into the team to kind of see what he's about. But he's back in the second tier of football with Sunderland, which to me seems crazy. And it just
Well,
shows
the
if you're a young player in that situation, it shows the importance of making the right decisions, I guess.
£10 million is not a small amount of money as well. It might be for the big boys, but if we had a £10 million flop, that would put us in the shit.
Yeah, so Scott made a good point actually. Scott's not here tonight, but he made a point about Tottenham fans being mad that between Clark and Sessegnon, the two players combined, the transfer fee amounted to £26 million, and that potentially is where Spurs' transfer strategy is downfallen because £26 million probably buys you a half decent top player that can do a job at Tottenham Football Club, but instead they spent big money on two championship players but failed to integrate them into the wider setup. Easier said than done, I know, but Ryan Sessegnon was the hottest property in Europe at one point, not just in England, and his fall from
He
grace.
was superb.
Yeah. So interesting, interesting. More importantly, though, and probably to save Paratici and Levy's blushes, just about. Obviously, Bentancur from Juventus came in, and Kulusevski from Juventus also came in. Interesting couple of signings. Ultimately, I follow Roma in Serie A, not Juventus, but I know Bentancur has been linked with United in the past. He's one of those that will break up play, and I think he'll try and control the play. He doesn't break the line, so he's not going to be your advanced playmaker, I don't think, but he'll do the dirty work. I imagine he'd work quite well up against Schweinsteiger, the two workhorses in that midfield. Can't say I know too much about Kulusevski. He was a big money signing for Juventus when Parisici was at Juve as director of football. I think they signed him for about 30 million euros, which was an obscene amount of money. So he didn't really play at Juventus for whatever reason. Could play in that attacking Roman, so 10 wide right. So he'll offer a couple of versatile options. So it'll be interesting to see how he sets up there. So as I say, jury's out on those signings. Good pedigree signings. And if they work and they hit the ground running, then Tottenham will, I think, benefit greatly. But Scott's alluded to this, and I think every Tottenham fan's alluded to this. They just need a massive turnaround of players, and that, you know, they've got to get themselves sorted for the summer. Obviously, Dele Alli, if that move goes through to Everton, is one big part of that. But you know, the other thing, you know, and Ndombele and Gil going out, that's a blow. And Lo Celso, even those three players, because they were big money players, all of them. And
mismanagement of money isn't just insane, isn't it?
Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy. And the fact that
one thing I would say is that the owners cannot piss Conte off, because he'll just simply piss off, to be honest, because he doesn't need it.
No, absolutely. And
he's got nothing to prove.
Exactly. And the interesting thing with an example, so Brian Gill from Valencia, only signed in the summer by Paratici and already out on loan. Youngster, granted, he looks a little bit lightweight, but the fact he couldn't even get a move in the Premier League, which I'm sure Tottenham would have preferred in order to see how he develops in the Premier League, is interesting. And actually, Parisici, I don't know if you remember, but when Tottenham signed him, he was hailed as this godfather of director of football that was going to reinvent the wheel at Tottenham. Now, whether that's because Levy hasn't really changed his ways, because, like he said he was going to, or whether it's just because Parisici is shit, I mean, let's face it, there's no coincidence both their signings have come from Juventus, so it's a bit of a limited handbook. You know, we'll see what happens come the summer. That's where he's going to earn his bread and butter, I think. But as I say, we'll see what happens there. They still haven't done enough, in my opinion, but you know, it was always going to be a tall order because there's a lot of deadwood at that club, and you know, they had to get it out and get it out as soon as possible. So
he could do huge things with Spurs. However, he just needs the back, and he just needs the owners basically to
He to needs trust the whole him. Summer window. He does. He needs the trust of the board. He needs a whole summer window, and he needs his director of football to work for him. It was never going to be resolved. I said this to, I think it was Cookie and Scott that were on last week. I don't think Conte would have walked out in January if they made two or three signings, regardless, because it's impossible as a manager, when you take a job on mid-season, to expect all the problems to be resolved in January. It's just not feasible. As Newcastle have found out, it's a seller's market. The seller will dictate the sales, and you're never. That project needs a couple of transfer windows in order to, or a whole summer window at least, in order to sort itself out. Obviously, there'll be the issue of Harry Kane, no doubt, in the summer again, although he's not really hit form this season, so he could well end up staying. But they've got a fair few things to sort out before they kind of get back to where they were. Watford, just quickly, so they've signed... I mean, I'm not going to pretend I've heard of any of these, but they've obviously signed a handful of players. Roy Hodgson in as new manager. I think it'll put the cat amongst the pigeons a little bit. I think, had this managerial appointment been next week, I don't think he necessarily saves them from the drop. But I've always said that front three of theirs and the midfield, it's not actually a bad... They've got good players. They just need to be gelled. And Roy Hodgson coming in with 2 weeks to literally drill them and stand those defenders up in a line of four for 2 weeks and not move them, they will know their jobs within the next 2 weeks.
That's a huge appointment for them.
I think he keeps them up.
That's yeah. The thing is, like, in that sense, then Everton probably will get dragged into it. They can potentially be absolutely fantastic. And with someone like Roy Hodgson at the helm, he's an absolute god of football. So, and yeah, basically watch this space with Watford, really, isn't it?
No, absolutely. And who knows? Who knows with Watford? It could all change in a flash. You never know what you're going to get with them. West Ham, fairly quiet by all accounts. I did think, you know, those rumours today of a Lingard bid going in. Obviously, the big talking point that we always seem to talk about is their backup option to Antonio and a striker up front. It doesn't look like, unless I've missed anything today, but it doesn't look like that's going to get resolved, which is interesting. Bit of breaking news for you. So Fabio Cavallo to Liverpool, agreement for around 10 million euros, youngster from Fulham. He's going to stay on loan until the end of the season. But again, as we mentioned with Diaz from Porto, that seems like another one where they're lining them up their options for the future. And it looks like Mateta is signing on a permanent from Palace. They've managed to renegotiate the loan, so they'll be paying around 8 million euros, which, look, for a 24-year-old striker in this day and age, backup or not, or starter, and he seems to be a starter at the moment, that seems like good business as well. So I digress from West Ham there, but yeah, fairly quiet from West Ham. Could it impact their hopes of Europe?
That's sort of started to go out the window already, hasn't it? Which is a shame. Definitely the top four seems to be too much of a ask for them. We were all enjoying watching West Ham and getting excited when they were beating Liverpool, for example. Antonio was firing every single week. However, he's gone quiet, started to slightly improve. However, like you say, it's just depth in their squad, really. The Lingard situation, that could have been, if they would have signed him this window, that could have been a huge statement, but obviously that wasn't to be from the sounds of it.
No, absolutely. And, you know, Moyes will give them stability. He's done a good job. And as you say,
fantastic job.
They'll carry on to the summer regardless. Wolverhampton Wanderers. So the last of the teams, again, nothing much to say. I mean, they've brought in a couple of players. So Kawabe from Grasshoppers, Chiquinho from Estoril. Again, I'm not going to pretend I know them because I don't. And Jiang Sang-bin from the Samsung Blue Wings. No major, the major news for them was just recently, obviously, it looked like he was Spurs bound. But he ended up at Barcelona, who seemed to be loaded to their players at the moment. And even crazier, Adama Traore and Braithwaite were playing together at Middlesbrough about 5 years ago. mental. And now they're both at Barcelona. Who would have ever called that? But yeah, so he didn't go to Spurs. He ended up at Barcelona. And
I was a bit gutted because obviously we watch Premier League every single week. Not massively interested in La Liga anymore. Haven't been for a few years. And Adama Traore is one of those players that just have so much hope and excitement when you watch him play. And it's usually ends in disappointment because of the end product. But under Conte, I would have loved to have seen him in the Premier League, but it is what it is. I don't blame him for going to Barca. If you believe the money that he's on, then it's just full respect for him. They've still got that pull. But yeah, Spurs must be a bit gutted for losing out on him because obviously Conte must have seen something in him that he thought he could get out of, which is what the whole footballing world, especially in the Premier League, wants to see. Because if you look at his stats, it's pretty terrible. But if you look at his flair and look at him whenever he gets the ball, everyone's looking at him because he's got so much potential. But how many more times do you want to say that Traore's got potential?
Well, exactly. And, you know, he's been around for, it seems like, years now. And I've always said it, you can't... He's still young, but, you know...
All legs, no feet.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. And it's... Eventually, that pace and that threat has to carry itself at some point, and you've got to be able to add goals and assist, yeah, especially for a team like Wolves. If he's at a United or a Barcelona where they've got Messi and Neymar, completely different because they'll get the bulk of the goals. But you know, teams like Wolves and the, you know, mid-table teams and the lower end of the
when you're
spectrum.
relying on him to have a
Yeah,
huge input, he's
you've
not
got
one
to
to.
yeah, you've got to have your goals and stuff.
And especially as Wolves have a quite a clear direction at the minute and they're doing really well in the season, they don't necessarily need that flair player to not really do anything for them.
No, exactly. So, and they arguably have performed better off without him as well, to be honest, overall. So I can't imagine
exactly.
Can't imagine they'll be too disappointed with that. Well, that's about it. Transfer roundup done. It's 10:06, so I think there's about 55 minutes left. If we're Jim White, we'll get the air time and the yellow ties out, but there's not not long left, and I don't imagine there's going to be anything majorly dramatic by the sounds of it, other than what we've already covered. FA Cup action obviously this weekend, which Alice have got Jeff Stelling's old team, which would be interesting. It is sold out Selhurst Park. But yeah, other than that, it'll be on to the... I think we've got on a midweek. There's quite a big feast of midweek action, isn't there, next week? So
yeah,
we'll be down at Carrow Road for the big one that everyone's watching.
Yeah, oh, of course.
Premier League equivalent of the Super Bowl. We'll just get in that in there for the NFL fans listening, because I'm sure everyone was kind of wanking himself into a coma over the Bengals last night. I don't know if you follow that. You get my drift.
Yep.
But yeah, well, look, I think between the pair of us, we've done a pretty good job. I believe we are back up to four next week. If Cookie is presumably joining us as well. So yeah, we'll get the thoughts of the two North London bell ends and see what they think. And we can wrap up our deadline day an hour early.
Yeah. I'm going for my yellow tie on.
Yeah, quick, go do it now. Quick, we'll get a snapshot. But no, thanks for joining us, Cos.
Thank you very much, Jason.
We did very well there, and we'll catch you all back next week.
Thanks for listening.
Good night.